From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we continue with our Coastline candidate interviews, and on this edition, we meet North Carolina Representative Holly Grange, a Republican from New Hanover County who was appointed to the seat in August after Rick Catlin announced he was stepping down. Holly Grange won the March primary in a contest with current New Hanover County Board of Education member Tammy Koval. She has no Democratic challenger in November. Representative Holly Grange, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
In North Carolina's 20th House District, which encompasses the northern portion of New Hanover County, 86% of residents are white, 8% are black, and 4.5% are Hispanic. Nearly 40% of the voters are registered as Republicans, 32% as Democrats, and about 28% are unaffiliated. Since Representative Grange is unopposed in this race, this hour is entirely hers to talk to you and yours to ask questions about the issues. There are two ways you can do that. Either send us an email at coastline@whqr.org or give us a call during this live Wednesday show at 910-343-1138. The phone lines are open now. Holly Grange, why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about who you are, where you've come from, and how you arrived in this place.
Okay. Well, I am what is affectionately known as a military brat. My father was career military, career Army. And I went to high school in Fayetteville, graduated from high school in Fayetteville, went from there to West Point, where I was in the third class with women. So people can do the math and figure out how old I am. Then went back to Fort Bragg for 5 years, where I met my husband, Dave Grange. And we went from there to Korea, to Washington, D.C., two more times back to North Carolina before this time. I left active duty military service in 1990 when my second son was born.
And what was your focus during your active
duty? I was
duty?
An engineer officer. I was in the Army Corps of Engineers. I served in the 20th Engineer Brigade at Fort Bragg and on 18th Airborne Corps staff. So I did everything from build bridges, make maps, and build base camps for 18th Airborne Corps.
And then once your son came along?
My second son, he was born in 1990, and we were going to have difficulty being assigned together in the military. So I decided at that point to resign my commission, stayed in the reserves for about another 7 years after that.
You're no longer in the reserves now.
I'm no longer in the reserves. My husband's last job in the Army was as commanding general of the 1st Infantry Division in Germany. And I was a reserve major at the time. And I received a letter one day that said, in the event of mobilization, you have 2 hours to report to Heidelberg, Germany. And I had a child in third grade and a child in fourth grade and had responsibilities with our military units, the family support groups. So I decided at that time that probably, you know, I didn't need to be in the reserves anymore at that point. So I resigned my commission from the reserves.
And at this point, your husband and the two of you have a company, Osprey Global Solutions.
We
and
do.
Osprey Armament. Can you tell us about that? And you are the director of community relations.
I am. And, you know, but that's not what brought us to Wilmington. My husband came to Wilmington we both came to Wilmington in 2009. He was at PPD. And when PPD sold, he started Osprey, which does security, it does training, it does remote area logistics and medical support. And
what does that mean in practical terms? Are there parts of the world now that
parts of the world, yes, places that you and I would probably not want to go, remote areas of Africa, the Middle East. We do work. It's not necessarily government work, but we do work for private corporations. We do training for private corporations and some governments.
And you said security and defense. So what?
Security and training.
Security and training. So
mm-hmm.
what are you training people in?
Training them in security matters, you know, physical security. Not necessary. Not mercenary forces or anything like
that. Is this how to protect?
How to protect themselves? How to protect their entities? How to protect their bases, their regions, things like that.
And is Osprey Armament a separate company?
It is. I believe it's merged in with Osprey. It's no longer a separate entity. And Osprey Armament develops weaponry, you know, for military and law enforcement, and as well as ammunition endeavors as well.
And as Director of Community Relations, what are your responsibilities?
My responsibilities are to be the interface with the community. In the past, most of my duties have been in a philanthropic way, to how we're going to support our local community. We like to have a focus on first responders as well, and a focus on military organizations.
And so are you talking about resources?
Resources, donating to certain causes, things like that.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're talking with Representative Holly Grange. She's the Republican incumbent in North Carolina's House District 20, and she's heading into her first full term as she is unopposed this November. We're taking your questions for Representative Grange on this Wednesday. The phone lines are open at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Holly Grange, you also work on a couple of different boards.
Mm-hmm.
You've been on the board of Coastal Horizons. Why is that organization important to you, and what do you still want to do with Coastal Horizons?
Well, I have loved being on the board at Coastal Horizons Center. Margaret Weller Stargell is the CEO, and she runs a very, very tight ship.
And for folks who aren't familiar, tell us what that is.
It's Coastal Horizons Center is an organization that provides substance abuse treatment, mental health services. They provide integrated care for their patients, so primary care services for their patients. They have an intensive home component where teams of people will go in and help in the home, everything from, you know, early childhood development type situations, at-risk homes, you know, to help to reduce the risk in a home. They provide training or reintegration services for people coming out of incarceration. So it's got a broad spectrum. We help children that have parents who are incarcerated. We also have a youth shelter for children who are at risk that need a safe place to be. And we also have a rape crisis center for this part of the state.
Will you be stepping away from your board responsibilities?
I have to be very careful. Ethically, I can stay on the board, but I would have to recuse myself in Raleigh on any matters that have to do with Coastal Horizons directly.
Is that because of funding?
Because of funding, because there were especially funding. They would like me to stay on the board, and I plan on doing that at least until we go into session in January.
What is it about the work that organization does that speaks to you?
Well, I look at what we're facing in this part of the state with our opioid problem, the drug issues. This is known as the heroin highway, Route 17 coming up the eastern part of North Carolina and South Carolina, heading north. We have some very unique issues here. We're number one in the country for opioid abuse, and we face it daily. I had the experience of serving on the grand jury in New Hanover County for a year, and I can say that easily 95% of our cases had to do with drug abuse, dealers mostly, but you know there's a demand for that here. So mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, drug addiction is a mental health issue. A lot of people don't look at it as that, but it is. And Coastal Horizon Center is, you know, at the forefront in handling some of those issues.
We're talking with Representative Holly Grange on Coastline's candidate interviews. You can ask her a question by calling 910-343-1138 or emailing us today at coastline@whqr.org. Bill from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're
My
welcome.
Question has to do with several decades ago, DOD and the U.S. Navy, based on studies of ice melt in the polar areas, said that in the long run, rising sea level would be a major security threat to the United States because of forced mass migration. The U.S. Navy was declined having funds to prepare for protecting the Norfolk Naval Base because of Republican congressmen who are very skeptical.
Okay, Bill, we're going to go to break pretty soon, so ask your question. And we
okay.
might need to answer it when we come back, but go ahead.
I'll be all right with an answer coming back. Given the skepticism by the Republican Party and the General Assembly on sea level rise, what is the representative's position on climate change and sea level rise and how to protect North Carolina?
Okay, your position on climate change and sea level rise. Bill, thanks so much for your call.
Well, climate change does exist. Personally, and from my research, my keeping up with that issue, I'm not sure that it is all man-made climate change, but climate change definitely does exist. And if scientific studies have determined that sea levels are rising, that's something that we need to deal with for whatever reason they may be rising, especially with our defense and especially with our delicate natural resources that we have here in southeastern North Carolina.
And if you want to flesh that out a little more when we
okay,
come back, we can
certainly
do that. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews on 91.3 FM. If you have a question for Representative Holly Grange, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We are joined today by North Carolina Representative Holly Grange, a Republican from New Hanover County who holds the seat vacated by Rick Catlin in August. She has no challenger in this election and so will continue as the representative for House District 20 in this upcoming term. And we're taking your questions. You can give us a call today at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Holly Grange, just before we went to break, you were explaining your position on climate change and sea level rise. And if you'd like to continue on that, you said climate change is real. You're not sure that it's all man-made.
That's exactly right. But that doesn't mean that sea level rise, you know, isn't real. If that's a prediction that's been made scientifically, then that's something we need to be concerned with.
And so how does that translate into your responsibility in the legislature in Raleigh? What do you expect to work towards planning for that?
Well, I think the first thing that I would do is to work with our local delegation or the coastal delegation, because it's something that I cannot alone address. There are other people that are just as concerned with it as I am, and we would take a concerted effort, a united front, I guess, from the coastal region to help people in Raleigh understand the concerns that we have.
Does it give you pause? Do you realize that might be something of an uphill battle? In 2010, I think it was, there was a moratorium put on the doing something with the data from scientists about
sea level rise. It certainly could be an uphill battle. There are a lot of regional issues that we have that people in Raleigh who encompass the rest of the state don't realize. So it's our our job is, as a delegation from the coastal areas or this part of the state, to help educate people on those issues and concerns. Because look at the tourism that we bring to this part of the state. You know, that's that brings in a lot of money for our state, a lot of publicity for our state. It's why a lot of people think this is a great place to live.
You have also served on the board of the North Carolina Ports Authority. Tell us about your work with that.
I thoroughly enjoyed my work with that, mostly because it was I could see some of the results of some of the efforts that I took, some of the votes that I made on that board.
What are some of the results
that
you're proud of?
We've instituted as a board, we have provided the resources to the director, the CEO, Paul Koza, to have more of an effort on business development. We were the stepchild of the East Coast ports, and now we are able to make a name for ourselves and bring more business to the port, bring more business to this part of the state.
There was a bill introduced by Senator Michael Lee during the last session, I believe, that had to do with removing the rocks near Zeke's Island. And I don't know that it ever was made clear. It sort of came up suddenly, and then there were several beach communities that were very opposed to this idea. They were concerned about unintended consequences, potential impacts that may not be predictable to their coastlines, their infrastructure. What can you tell us about that bill, and how is it related to the business of the Ports Authority?
I am not familiar with that. Senator Lee, I had one board meeting with him before he left to take over Senator Goolsbee's Senate seat. So I was not in on any of the discussions that had to do with that. So I'm not familiar with this bill, so I really can't have an opinion on it. But I will say that we have to be very careful whatever we do off our coast because there are repercussions. There are unintended consequences sometimes when we try to alter Mother Nature.
And so when you think about the biggest priorities for coastal stakeholders, what are they? What will you bring with you to Raleigh?
Well, of course, a big concern for people in our region is beach renourishment. Dredging is always important. You know, being on the Ports Authority, our port up in Morehead City had a lot of shoaling issues and that need to be addressed long term, not necessarily short term. We could dredge there continuously and we would still have the same issues. Erosion, you know, we've got a storm coming this weekend. So erosion is a big issue that other people in the state don't, you know, the representatives from other parts of the state, they don't understand that our focus has to be on that because that's our livelihood down here.
And so part of your job is to educate other
mm-hmm.
legislators.
Yes, and right, and get them to look at the big picture.
So when you're talking about the big picture with fellow Raleigh legislators, Are we talking about funding for shoreline stabilization?
It's always about money. It's always about money, and there has to be a give and take. Of course, I have not actually done anything in Raleigh yet. I was sworn in on August 29th, and we're not in session now. Everyone is running for re-election right now. So, and of course, I will be the most junior member of the delegation from our region, but I need to work with everybody else so that, you know, towards our common goals.
So of course there will be a learning curve. What
yes.
have you learned so far? You said you were sworn in August 29th.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Since then, what have you learned?
Well, what I've done since August 29th is just try there are a lot of conferences going on now, different organizations. There are a lot of opportunities for me to get out and meet with constituents. So I'm just trying to do that so that I know what concerns them and you know, I can focus on what I need to think about when I go to Raleigh.
So far, what are you hearing? Beach renourishment is a big one, we know.
Beach renourishment's always one. I get a lot of emails about current issues that are going on in the state. And personal people issues that we all face that we don't really want to think about, like texting and driving, you know, that's a big problem. Things like that, people will, you know, will email me.
Is there anything issues. To be done on that issue? I mean, texting and driving is illegal in North Carolina, is it not?
I don't think that that's ever been there. I don't think there's a law on that.
Okay.
I think that there has been talk of doing something about that, but I don't think that we actually have anything on the books. We're doing the research now so that I can focus on that. But I will say that that seems to be one of the things that I've heard most about since I got sworn in. From friends of mine and from people just emailing me.
You have talked about regulatory reform as being important to you.
Yes.
And that's a sweeping category. There's a lot that falls under that umbrella.
Yes.
What specifically are you talking about?
We need to make sure that it's attractive for small business to be in business. As we know, most of our jobs come from small business. It's not our big industries that we have in Wilmington or the Wilmington area. So we need to make it attractive for small business to be in business. And North Carolina tends to be a very regulatory climate. You know, there are a lot of regulations that people need to abide by. So that is one of the committees that I've asked to be put on, is the Regulatory Reform Committee.
And what are some of the restrictions that you know exist now that you think hamstring a business?
Even in the area of licensing, professional licensing, we've licensed just about everything with educational requirements, with fees, with continuing education.
What's an example of a profession or a business that requires a license now that you think shouldn't?
Well, I'm not saying it doesn't require a license. I'm saying that we don't make it easy to get a license. For instance, there's a lot of effort and time required to get a barber's license in North Carolina. There's less time required to get a welder's license. You know, so some of it just seems a little out of whack. You know, we have to be common sense on some of this stuff.
There is always criticism of the current administration.
Absolutely.
And always criticism of the prevailing party, the majority. We've heard a lot of that during this election season. What do you think has gone right in Raleigh recently?
I think that there are a lot of good things happening in North Carolina now. The fact that we have a surplus now, a rainy day fund, which would have been nice to have after the events of 2008. We have brought a lot of business to the state. I'm talking Raleigh as a whole, the whole administration. We have improved teacher pay. We have a plan to finance more of our transportation endeavors. We have provided more funding for the ports, for instance, that one of, you know, our big accomplishments in this year has been to widen the turning basin so that we can get larger ships into the Port of Wilmington. And that we would not have been able to do that if we hadn't received funding from Raleigh. North Carolina is becoming a great place to live. The tax structure, we've reduced taxes. There's probably more that can be done on all of those issues, but at least we're moving in the right direction.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Representative Holly Grain. She's the Republican incumbent in North Carolina's House District 20. And we're taking your questions for Representative Grain today. You can reach us by calling 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. No doubt, Representative Grange, you're getting emails about HB 2.
Yes.
This has, of course, been on the national stage for quite a while, and North Carolina has seen some great losses, millions of dollars worth of losses in terms of events that were scheduled for North Carolina, athletic associations that would have held their championship events here. Yes. We've seen performers leave. We've seen businesses decline to expand. The list goes on. There are states now, I think there might be six, that have said travel to North Carolina cannot be a state-sanctioned endeavor, all because of HB 2. What do you think about that law?
Well, I will say, first of all, that the emails that I get are about 50-50, for and against. I will also say that, I will ask people to actually read the law. On its face, it is not discriminatory. That being said, I will say that I have never, ever, in any bathroom in my whole life, and that's been a long time, I'm not a young woman, that I've never questioned the gender of anyone in the bathroom with me, and frankly, I don't often even make eye contact with people I'm in the bathroom with. Also, I think that if someone wants to go in and hurt somebody in a bathroom, they're going to do that regardless of whether there's a law saying that a man can't go in a woman's bathroom and a woman can't go in a man's bathroom.
So you're saying this law is not opening the door for predators. It's that door was already open because it's illegal.
Right. The intent of the law, if it's privacy issues, that privacy that you feel that you should have in a bathroom when you go in a bathroom, then the law covers that. But I think that the messaging on the law, perhaps the spin, it's become something much more than it really is.
Sarah writes, given the negative rhetoric and misinformation used against you during the Republican primary, do you have more empathy for transgender and other LGBT people who face increased harassment due to the passage of HB 2?
I don't know that they're going to face increased harassment because of HB 2, but I will say that I don't think anybody should be harassed, regardless of whether they're LGBT or transgender or anything, or for any reason whatsoever, that people don't deserve to be harassed. There are court cases pending that will probably address whether or not LGBT community should have protections afforded by the Constitution as far as a protected class, or whether the discrimination based on that, but that's all in the courts now. And that'll tell us, what we need to do.
And that's essentially what Governor Pat McCrory has said, is I'm going to step back and let the courts.
And unfortunately, it's become it's an election year, it's become a political issue. So it's one of those things that there's no right answer at this point.
Sarah goes on. She has a lot to say. Mm-hmm. Will you lead the effort to repeal HB 2 among House Republicans and replace it with measures that will improve real safety, like providing funding to reduce the 7 months processing time on rape kits at the state crime lab? So first of all, there are two parts of that. You've been critical of the state crime lab and the backlog there. And we'll get to that in a second. But let's talk first just about repeal. Is that on the table for you? Is that something you would address?
I would certainly think about it. You have to understand that I am the low guy on the totem pole in the General Assembly right now. I'm the most junior legislator. But I will certainly work with others. There's a saying in the military that perception becomes reality, and in this case, HB 2, that perception has now become reality. And whether I think it's discriminatory, which I don't, if it's perceived as that, so perhaps it needs to be addressed. Yes.
Now let's talk about the state crime lab. You have been critical of Attorney General Roy Cooper's handling of evidence in the crime lab, and there was a backlog. The Department of Justice says that backlog has been dealt with, and there is no longer a backlog.
There is a backlog.
Tell us about
that.
There
is a backlog. My problem with Attorney General Cooper's saying that he took care of everything is that he hasn't. There were times that the crime lab was telling jurisdictions, don't send us rape kits unless you have a suspect, as opposed to going in and testing them. There was a rape kit in Fayetteville that was found that was 7 years old in a refrigerator with everybody's lunch. So, you know, there is a backlog. And WRAL actually did fact-finding on that issue and determined that there are still backlogs up to 2 years. And it's not just rape kits. It's DWIs, blood alcohol results, it's murder investigations, and all of those, any criminal investigation, there was a backlog. And my problem with Attorney General Cooper saying that he's taking care of it is that number one, he is not, and number two, you can't blame it on everybody else when you've been in the job for 15 years.
And I think Noelle Talley, who is the spokesperson for the Department of Justice, works in Roy Cooper's office, said, This so-called backlog is 7.5 months, but it's everything. It's an average of all these. It's murder cases and rape cases, and as you say, DWI.
Yes.
So that's not reasonable.
Well, there have been situations, and there have been situations in recent years that, and now keeping in mind that this backlog has gone on since before Roy Cooper was there, but he's the owner now.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews on 91.3 FM. We're talking with Representative Holly Grange of North Carolina's House District 20. After this 90-second break, you'll have another chance to ask a question. It's our last segment. 910-343-1138 is the number to call. When we come back from the break, we will talk to Jim from Wilmington. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Representative Holly Grange is with us today, appointed at the end of August to finish out Rick Catlin's second term. She is unopposed this November and about to embark on her first full term as the representative for North Carolina's House District 20. This is your last chance to ask Representative Grange a question on this Wednesday. The number to call is 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. John from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you, and good afternoon, and thanks for the opportunity to speak to the representative.
You're welcome.
As a former military guy myself and a commander of one of the Air Force bases overseas, I'm retired now, but I have, and I loved her little quip about the perception versus reality. My perception is that the infrastructure here in New Hanover County cannot support the increasing load the roads are being put on by the new developments, et cetera. We all get backed up at rush hour, as we all know. And it's, I think, hopefully it's just a perception, and I hope it doesn't turn into reality. But my question to the representative is she concerned? And if so, what can she do about it, if anything? And what can the citizens of this beautiful place do about it? Because, quite frankly, it's really getting overcrowded. And all the new stuff that's being built, the apartments, they're all going to have two cars in those apartments, and it's just going to increase the traffic here.
Representative Grange, traffic and this growing population, how do we deal with
it? Well, John, I think it is reality already. I live in the northern part of the county and try to avoid Market Street at all costs during certain times of the day. I am unfortunately not in charge of any of the permitting that is done for all of these apartment complexes and housing developments that are being built. However, one of the things that I may in Raleigh have an impact on is perhaps some of the transportation funding. We do have two of the top 10 worst intersections in the state in Wilmington right now that are being addressed. And there are plans on the books to eventually extend Military Cutoff to the bypass and then extend the bypass north to Hampstead. So those are years down the road. Those projects take years of planning and studies, and they have to purchase land and that, so, you know, nothing is going to be done in the near term, but you need to talk to your county commissioners and the zoning board, and they're the ones giving the permits for all of these developments.
Don, thanks so much for your call. When you consider the recent protests in Charlotte over the fatal shooting of Keith Lamont Scott by a police officer, do you think there have been enough of these events stacked up that there's an issue and we need to look again at how we're policing and what the relationship is between law enforcement and members of the community? Is there anything that now is on your plate to take to Raleigh
well,
on
I
this
think
issue?
Well, I think that issue, there have been a lot of situations, there have been a lot of events, but they have to be looked at individually. And we have a national movement now. And from what I understand, the people that were arrested in Charlotte were not even from North Carolina. They were from other parts of the country.
You're talking about the protesters.
The protesters, people that actually, that the violence that occurred after Mr. Smith's death. They're from other parts of the country. That this has become a national movement. It's everything has been generalized. That the police is the wrongdoing is on the part of the police, and that's not fair, and it's not true. But I do think that there needs to be efforts for police officers to be able to interact with their community peacefully. And there's obviously a problem, or there wouldn't be so much uproar. So it does need to be addressed.
Do you think there's a racial divide in North Carolina?
There seems to be in Charlotte. There's probably a racial divide everywhere. There's always, unfortunately, and that's too bad. My background growing up in a military environment, we never looked at race because everyone is thrown in the same bucket. And it's a shame that, yes, that exists. And yes, we need to work on that.
We've heard a lot from listeners over the last several weeks as we've done these Coastline candidate interviews about their concerns regarding offshore drilling, specifically as coastal stakeholders. When we look at the Senate race, North Carolina Senate District 9, which is incumbent Senator Michael Lee versus Democratic challenger Andrew Barnhill, they have pretty polarized positions there. Senator Lee says that he supports offshore exploration for natural gas. Andrew Barnhill says he opposes drilling offshore of any kind. Where do you stand on that issue?
I think we can safely explore offshore. From what I understand, though, the federal government, there's a moratorium on any type of progress in that direction off of our coast.
The Mid-Atlantic has been taken out of consideration for the next five-year plan, which I mm-hmm. think is 2017 to 2022. That's a few years away. And, of course, it could be reconsidered. And, you know, we've been just hearing so much from our listeners about this issue in the last several weeks.
Well, I understand their concern. It's not anything that we need to deal with at this moment, but exploration can be done safely. I'm not saying that we need to go beyond that, but we can't even do that right now. So
it's not an issue for the next term
for
you.
You know, yes, we'll address it when it comes up.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking today with Representative Holly Grange of North Carolina's House District 20. If you have a question, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Jim from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Holly, for taking my call, and good afternoon, Representative. I'm a commercial truck driver. I also have a prior service military background. As such, truck drivers see the world from a totally different perspective riding down the interstates. What are your plans to help better educate motorists and to help better ticket motorists who drive dangerously around trucks? Now, for me, it's a major concern because I do transport bulk hazardous materials, and we see people cut us off on a regular basis.
Representative Grange, thanks so much for your call.
Wow, I can only imagine what you see from that cab on the highways. The education is the best way to do it, is to educate people at the, I guess, at the DMV level and through media on the issues of driving around trucks. I moved to North Carolina from the Midwest, where there is a lot of truck traffic on the road, and have spent a lot of time on I-95, where things in Virginia get stopped on a dime with truck accidents. It's awareness. I'm not sure that ticketing will work, but I think it needs to be a broader public service type program to get people educated on how to maneuver around trucks.
As you know, film incentives were a big deal for this area. And since the structure of the incentive has changed from a tax rebate to a grant fund, we've watched all kinds of businesses, small businesses, leave this area. And this was one of the rare issues that most of the local delegation was of one mind on. There were a couple of outliers, including your predecessor, Rick Catlin. Where do you stand on film incentives?
The problem with the old system, well, the old system is gone. We have the grant program now. I and probably the rest of the delegation would agree with me that we need to try to beef up the pot of grant money. I do agree that it's more beneficial for us to have long-term projects in our area as opposed to short-term projects.
Such as TV series.
Yes, TV series. Rather, you know, the TV series is going to provide more for our community than Iron Man. And that's true. And TV series that have been here in the past are still providing revenue to this area because of tourism coming to see where One Tree Hill was filmed and Dawson's Creek and this, that, and the other. I think the neat thing and the thing that will help our cause is that the grant money is not just focusing on southeastern North Carolina. There are other parts of the state that are getting the grant money now for projects, and that will help us get more backers, more people in the General Assembly that are for us perhaps beefing up that pot of money.
Has part of this been a learning curve for members of the General Assembly who are not in areas where there's a lot of film activity?
Well, lawmakers can be very territorial, and if it's not something that's going to benefit their district or their area, they're not going to support it, especially if it involves money.
What do you think needs to change in North Carolina where gun laws are concerned? Do we have it right?
I think we do. We have a permitting process for handguns where people have to go through a background check with their county sheriff. We have training programs that are required if you decide you want to carry a firearm concealed. And that involves actually shooting the firearm. A funny thing is Virginia now won't accept reciprocity they won't give reciprocity to North Carolina and other states now because of training requirements when I have a Virginia concealed carry permit that I got online.
You had to demonstrate nothing.
I had to take an online course and send them a certificate and pay a fee. Where here, I'm actually a concealed carry instructor in North Carolina. You know, not only did I have to go through training, I had to go through other firearm training in order to get that credential. But to get a concealed carry in North Carolina, you actually have to prove that you could shoot.
So if I want to get a concealed carry permit, then what do I need to do in North Carolina?
You would need to take a concealed carry course, and then you have to go through the process of registering for your concealed carry permit with your county sheriff's office.
What kind of a check will the county sheriff's office do on me?
They will require background checks. They'll do mental health, mental health record checks, and then it varies by county to county. New Hanover County, though, is a very extensive procedure. It's a six pages of form that you have to fill out and things that you need to provide in order to get your concealed carry. And it's not something you get immediately. It's something that goes through a process, and it can be some months before you actually receive your permit.
We hear so much about the polarization of the electorate in this country. And we've heard so much about the divided state of North Carolina. And part of that we've heard from a political scientist is the influx of people from other places who tend to come in with more moderate views. We've heard that it's urban versus rural. But however you slice it, there is something of a polarization here. How do you think that's an issue? Is that a healthy exchange of ideas, or is there a level of vitriol creeping into that?
I hope there's not a level of vitriol creeping into that, but there probably is. We are very polarized, and we do have the population of people moving into North Carolina, and particularly this part of the state, are people from the Northeast, and their views are more moderate. Not necessarily fiscally, but definitely socially more moderate, and that causes polarization. People, that exists.
And so how will your voice in Raleigh contribute to the tone, whatever that is?
Well, I have to look at what my constituents are telling me. You know, I have a very diverse constituency with respect to a lot of issues. And I need to listen to them. I think it's just listening to people, hearing people out, and looking at both sides of an issue before I choose a side.
Now, it's 2018. You are wrapping up your first term in elected office. What's different in North Carolina, and what happened in Raleigh during that 2-year term, and what are you proud of?
Well, it depends. It depends on who is elected governor. It depends on whether or not the North Carolina House remains a supermajority.
But what did you do?
Well, I would like to say that I've made positive strides for people of this part of the state. And I would also like to hope that people would think I'm a team player, that I'm a very loyal person. And so my constituents hopefully can count on that I will be loyal to them. But, I'm a team player.
And so give us one positive stride, one specific positive stride that you made for this region in that first term.
Helping to bring business to this area and anything that I can do to help bring business to this area so we can get jobs on all levels, good paying jobs, making this area attractive to new business, helping better education, transportation issues, crime, things like that.
And that's this edition of Coastline Candidate Interviews. Representative Holly Grange, it's been a pleasure having you today.
Thank you.
Remember, one-stop voting begins October 20th. October 14th is the deadline to register to vote in the November 8th election. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Caleb Covington engineered the show today. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.